On this tape is the record of an interview conducted by Jane Durden with Miss Doreen Nellie Sturm, commonly known amongst her friends as Anne Sturm, of Farrell Street, Glenelg, South Australia. Anne Sturm is a retired nurse. She trained at the Adelaide Hospital and is best known for the 24 years that she spent as matron of the Glenelg Community Hospital until the time of her retirement. The interview is being conducted to collect information for a history of nursing in South Australia. The interview is being conducted on Wednesday, the 15th of June, 1988, at Miss Sturm's home in Glenelg. And is Anne spelt with an E?
Yes, it is.
Good. Which year were you born, Anne?
1914. The 9th of September, 1914.
And were you born in South Australia?
Yes, I was born in McGill and lived there for some years.
Mm-hmm. You had your schooling in that
district? No, I had my schooling at Campbelltown Primary School, which was a lovely little school.
Yes.
I loved it there.
Good. Tell me a little bit about your family. Were you one of several children?
Yes, there were three children in the family. I had a brother 12 years older than me and a sister 9 years older. So I lived a very protected life.
Yes, how interesting.
And very spoiled.
Yes. Others to look after.
Yes. They were almost another mother and father for me because they were very good to me.
And did you move from McGill over to the Campbelltown area that you went to school?
Yes, we did. And my parents came from Birdwood, actually. Mm-hmm. My father's family were second generation from Germany.
Yes.
And my mother, her family were English. Mm-hmm. They came from Hampshire in England.
Okay.
Yes, and my grandfather migrated out to Western Australia and then came to South Australia. And they were farmers at Mount Torrens.
Mm-hmm.
And my father's family were in business at Birdwood, carpentry and that sort of thing. Mm. And they moved to Adelaide, to McGill, just before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother and sister were born in Birdwood and I was born in the city.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you had your primary schooling at Campbelltown.
Campbelltown, yes.
Was that the State School of Campbelltown?
State School at Campbelltown.
It was a very small district in those days.
Well, I suppose it was. I can't tell you how many were in the school, but I know there were at least two or three classes in the one room.
Were there?
Yes. It was a marvellous schooling with wonderful teachers and a wonderful headmaster who always tried to encourage me to be a teacher.
Yes. What was his name?
McCaffrey. Yes, Mr. McCaffrey, yes.
Some people might remember that
That's
name.
That's right, yes. He was a wonderful man.
But in fact, you didn't become a teacher.
No.
What happened to you as you came on through schooling and on towards...
Well, funnily enough, I always wanted to be a nurse. Actually, I wanted to be a nurse before I knew what it meant. I'm quite sure of that because I used to hang around my mother's skirts and people used to say, what would you like to be? And I think I was a very young age and said, I wanted to be a nurse. And I really didn't know what it was because I used to faint if I saw anybody in uniform. Isn't that odd? Yes.
And were there any nurses in the family? Or
no.
Where do you think you got that idea from?
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. No idea at all, except that I always loved children. And if anybody had a baby in a pram, I always wanted to wheel it or to look after them.
Yes.
And naturally, I wanted to train at the children's.
Mm.
But
and what happened then?
Well, it was rather difficult, I suppose. I went to Nord Central School and did my schooling there until I was about 16, I suppose, 16 going on 17.
Yes.
And then I went to the School of Mines and did dressmaking. And for about 6 months, I don't remember when I put my name down to be a nurse or what I actually had to do, but I definitely wanted to go to the children's.
Mm-hmm.
And then this call came for me to go to Loxton.
So you must have also had your name down with the hospital's department.
I must have done, yes. I don't remember doing that.
No.
But I must have done.
That would have been the process.
Yes. So I started my training.
And what age were you?
18.
Yes.
I was 18 in the September, and I went to Loxton about November.
This makes it 1932.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Mm. That was still during the time of the Depression, or coming out of the Depression period. Do you have any recollections of that economic situation affecting
yes,
family?
Yes, very events? Much so. We were very poor, actually. Mm. I can remember that. But my grandmother died during that period, and I think, you know, there was a legacy so that I was able to go on and do my schooling.
Good.
And was a bit spoilt about it all. And then, of course, once I started nursing, then that was it.
Yes. So you went to Loxton.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that. I haven't talked to anyone who's been at Loxton.
Haven't you? Oh, it was a wonderful experience.
Tell me all about it, but you remember
it. It was the most wonderful experience because I was the youngest member there. And Matron Blackwell and Marjorie Clark, Sister Marjorie Clark, who both trained at the Children's, they were matron and charge sister. And Carl Dorsch was the doctor up there, wonderful surgeon.
Yes.
And also Dr. Tenko, who was a Japanese doctor. His son is a dentist, I think.
How do we spell that name, Tenko?
T-A-N-K-O. Yes.
Right, yes. So he was a general practitioner.
Yes. And Carl Dorsch was also a general practitioner, but was a wonderful surgeon. Of course, the Dorsches were a wonderful family, weren't they? Yes.
Well,
yes, and he also used to give us our lectures in physiology.
Yes.
My goodness me, they were really funny. We used to go to his sitting room and sit down for his lectures, and he used to throw his legs over the chair and say, God's little fishes, I don't know what I'm going to tell you today. So I don't know how I learned anything there, but I did, and I passed my physiology.
How many training nurses would there have been?
About six, I think.
Yeah.
It was also a midwifery training school.
So many of the wonderful
training. My goodness me, we had to work hard. I think I'd never been in a hospital before in my life. I can remember walking past Unley Private Hospital and looking in the door and seeing somebody in uniform and falling on the footpath in a dead faint. And yet I walked into that hospital and, you know, I loved every minute. It was so busy. We had such sick people.
But it was and
before the days of antibiotics,
of course.
Sulfanilamide, I think, came in whilst I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was put on night duty 6 weeks after I started. The only one in the general part with a midwifery sister to look after the midwifery section.
Mm-hmm.
And we had empyemas and ruptured appendix and broken legs and hysterectomies in the women's section, you know, and we had to cope with it all. You'd go on duty at night, and the first thing you'd do was to take everybody's temperature, and then you would get matron and doctor supper, which would be toast with tomato and cheese and coffee or whatever, and take it over on a big tray and stand up in front of them and recite all the elevated temperatures without a note.
It was fairly daunting for a crew who'd only been there six weeks.
So you accepted that, and then you'd work madly all night and finish up. You'd have to do all the dirty laundry and everything and go off duty about 8 o'clock in the morning, absolutely exhausted. And that's the time when I used to feel terribly homesick. My mother she developed diabetes when I went away from home from the shock of my going away. So when my time came after my first night duty, we used to have a week off, they wouldn't allow me to go home because they thought I wouldn't go back.
Yes. What about the other trainees there? You obviously saw the distance. Did most of them?
Yes, all of them. Yes, and we've remained friends over the years. Yes.
Well, now, tell me a little bit about your time at the Adelaide. You've mentioned briefly some of those experiences at Loxton. Yes.
Well, strangely enough, at Loxton, I could never do theatre work. I would faint as soon as they'd start in the theatre. And, of course, they did a lot of surgery there. Mm. And particularly anything to do with gynae or med somehow upset me. I'd only have to hear somebody was coming in with a miscarriage and I'd faint. And this, I really have no idea why this should happen. But when I went to the Adelaide, I vowed and declared that I would never go to the theatre. I'd leave if I was sent to the theatre. I'd leave if I went to Dark Costa. Do you remember that awful little Dark Costa one?
Miscarriages.
Well, as it happened, I went to Dark Costa and Sister Galt was there and she was wonderful to me. And she held me by the hand and took me through all the procedures and I coped with it very well. So I was very happy there. I did quite a lot of training with her. And I did a lot with Sister Kitson in Victoria Ward, which was a very busy surgical ward, but I loved it and got on very well with Kit. And did quite a lot of time in Flinders.
Sister Rogers?
Yes, yes. She was tough, my word. They were wonderful sisters. They were really wonderful army sisters. And they really taught us very well.
And what do you recall about lectures when you were a transfer at the Adelaide?
Well, I think I went to the School of Mines and did cooking. And invalid cooking and some
certificates
there. I cannot recall what other lectures I went to.
Most people seem to have recollections of going to doctor's lectures at night. Down in one of the university lectures.
That's right, yes. I think I can recall that vaguely. But I must say, and I'm ashamed to say, that I attended very few lectures while I was at the Royal Adelaide.
Well, you weren't very required few. To attend very many. That, the number was very
that
small.
That is so, yes, yes. And, so I don't really... I remember Miss Scrimgeour coming back, and I think towards the end of my time... at the Royal Adelaide, I probably attended a few more lectures when after she'd come back.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Yes.
She had been away with on her Florence Nightingale scholarship.
Yes,
and
yes.
And came back, I think, in 1937. And
yes,
that was,
so
you
that
were
would be.
Heard of that year.
Yes, so that would have been towards the end of my training.
Did you appreciate the fact that she was there to give some lectures? Or was it just something that you went along with?
Well, I don't think I went along with it very much, to tell you the truth. I always had a book to read or a book to study from, but I think I got most of my training from my practical work.
Yes.
I could always associate that with the theory. Yes, yes. And it really was good nursing. We had to, you know, really do things for them because there were not the antibiotics. And people used to stay in bed so much longer in those days. They weren't ambulant as they are today. It's a very changed scene now.
Yes,
particularly pre-antibiotics. Yes, and I think that we're part of that change ourselves. I can remember thinking when I worked in Victoria Ward with Sister Kitson, I used to think she was so tough and I used to think I'll never treat trainee nurses like she treats us.
You did find her tough in that way.
Oh, she was, she was. She was very tough and it was hard going, but good training.
You felt you learnt, but it was the
oh,
hard way
yes,
of learning.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
And we'd get very tired. I can remember on night duty in those wards, you'd just run all night. And the meals, we'd have to cut up about a dozen loaves of bread at 4 o'clock in the morning to get be ready for their breakfast. They used to have boiled sago. Billy cans of boiled sago you'd rash around the
and
ward
bread
and bread and butter. That was breakfast. Yes. Yes.
No trays?
No trays. No, you'd plonk these things on their lockers.
Yes, it was not much finesse, was
it? No, absolutely. Well, you really didn't have time to.
No, that's right.
But at least the wards were always clean and polished, and the patients were always kept clean and well sponged and cared for, which is, after all, the important thing.
The essence of it.
Absolutely, yes.
Interesting. Yeah. So you finished towards the end of 1937.
Yes.
And your other Loxton friends.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, you were going to tell me something, I think, about where you roomed, what your accommodation was at the Adelaide.
Yes, well, I think almost as soon as I went there, I roomed with these, with Weidenhofer and Julie Kelly.
Mm.
We were in the main building for a time.
Mm.
And then I guess we went to Austral for night duty.
Yes.
And there we remained, and we roomed in a very large room in the basement at Austral House for the rest of the time we were at the Royal Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We had an open fire in the room, and one, we'd have a bed on either side of the fireplace. How we didn't ever burn that Austral House down, I'll never know. We used to keep it going all night, yes. The fire would be kept going all night, and we'd lean out of bed almost in our sleep and put on a log of wood.
Yes, but I'm glad they made some concession, because the coldness there must have been ghastly.
Yes, well, I think when you're young you don't notice those things.
Not,
and I used to go home and sleep a lot.
Yes.
Especially on night duty, I'd always go home and sleep during the day.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, what were your thoughts on finishing training?
Oh, I loved every minute of my training. I was just so enthusiastic about nursing. I loved it.
Good.
Loved caring for people.
And so did you have plans by that time as to what your next move would
be? Yes, I was determined to do my midwifery, which I did in 1938.
More or less straight on.
Yes, I did a little private nursing in the meantime.
Did you join a nursing bureau for that?
Yes, I think I must have done.
Mm.
But even that's a bit hazy. I don't quite remember clearly about that. But I went to the Queen Victoria in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Day was matron, and Miss Carroll was the deputy. Yes. She was the Labour Ward sister, and a very wonderful one.
Mm.
I think it was Miss Carroll that really introduced me to midwifery, and I admired her so much that I loved it, and I loved her.
Yes.
She was absolutely the beginning and end of my midwifery training. I loved it because of her, and she used to give us our lectures, which I also enjoyed. So I did go to lectures while I was at the Queen of Victoria. And I think I passed with a credit, so it must have done something for me. And then I stayed on at the Queen Vic.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I was invited to stay back.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that
I was there.
Did you more Labour Ward experience?
Yes. Good. More general, mainly Labour Ward experience, but I liked that very much. But I was also, I think this was the Adelaide Hospital training too. Those old sisters had been there for so many years. I vowed and declared I'd never stay anywhere for any length of time.
You thought they were too old for service, didn't you?
Yes. And the other thing was, I think I really wanted to learn more. I needed to know more about babies. But during our training at the Queen Victoria Hospital, now it makes my blood run cold, I think we had a trolley.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to pack those babies on to the trolley. They were never labelled, you know. They were never labelled, and yet we knew those babies, and if we didn't know them, their mothers did. If we gave them the wrong baby, they'd know. And we used to run up and down that staircase with three babies in our arms at a time at the Queen Vic.
I see you had your mothers. Where were the nurseries?
The nursery was downstairs.
And the mothers
were upstairs.
That's extraordinary.
Yes, we used to run up and down those stairs with three babies in our arms at a time.
And I presume it was never an accident.
Never an
nothing
accident.
Nothing was ever questioned.
Nothing at all. Babies were never labelled. Mothers were never labelled. Their cribs were labelled. They had their names on their cribs.
It was up to you to get the right baby back into the right crib.
This is right. Yes. Well, we managed it somehow. Yes. Wonderful.
Yes.
wonderful.
Yes, you were very alert. Yes.
Mm. Well, we had to be, you know, you had to be very observant in nursing in those days. Well, I suppose they do now, don't they?
Yes, that's true, but it's, it was certainly paramount.
Yes, yes, mm. yes. So I'm not sure how long I stayed, but Queen Vic, my reference is there from stay.
Good.
And then I went, I had my name down already then to go to the Toobie King Baby Training Hospital in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
So whilst I was waiting for a call to go there, I was at the Hutchison Hospital at Gawler.
Yes.
Worked in the general and midwifery section there with mm-hmm. Dr. Covington.
Yes.
Yes, I remember him.
Just before the war, or had war broken out by this time, do you recall?
Well, no. I went to Tweddle in 1940, so war broke out in 1940.
Well, end of 39.
Yes,
yes.
Yes,
I see.
So it was about that time, and I really wanted to join up and go to the war. But when I'd finished my 4 months at Tweddle, which I thoroughly enjoyed, I went to an agency on Track Road, South Yarra, because I hadn't done my final exam for infant welfare, and I thought it was round about the end of October that I finished, and I thought, and I had a week to go before I did my final exam, so I thought I'd stay in Melbourne, have that week to relax and study and do some private nursing until Christmas time before I came back home.
Mm-hmm.
And the day, of course, nurses were very short during those years, as you can imagine.
Lots had been called up for army service.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. So almost as soon as I got into the agency, there was a call to go to a private patient in South Yarra. And that happened to be Arthur Bailey, whose name didn't mean a thing to me. I didn't know who the Baileys were. He was just some other old boy that needed a private nurse. So I went along there, and there's a nice gentleman sitting up in bed, in his 70s he was, and he said, "Oh, you know, you're only here for a few days." And I said, "Well, I wouldn't have come otherwise, because I have an exam to do on Friday, and I can only stay here until Tuesday anyway." So he had somebody else coming at that time.
Yes.
So by the Tuesday, he said he'd like me to stay on and be a night sister.
Yes.
And I said, "Oh, I couldn't do that because I wanted to go home at Christmas time, and I had my exam to do." And he said, "Well, if you'll stay, you can have the chauffeur and the car to take you to your exam and bring you home." Made it all sound very interesting. So I thought about it and said, yes, I would. And I stayed there for 3 years.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes, had it very interesting.
You left Melbourne then when Mr. Bailey died. Yes. Sometime after you came back to Adelaide.
Yes, yes.
And that would have been about
1943. And I went to the Toobie King Clinic in King William Street. And was there for quite a long time.
That was good to consolidate. Yes.
Oh, I loved it. Yes. Most interesting.
Mm.
And they were the days when babies were fed regularly, 4 hourly to the very minute. Although I think I was always very lenient about that and always felt that they should be fed when they were hungry and not allowed to die, not allowed to be too hungry and to cry.
Mm.
And but we used to give them all that carryall and big fat diet. So yes,
they grew lovely big fat babies.
Yes, a lot of babies couldn't tolerate. Carryall was the emulsion.
Is that spelt with a K?
Yes. A R I O L. I forgot what the sugar was.
Oh. And was it added to the milk feeding?
Yes, added to the milk feeding. Yes. So they were. That was an interesting 12 months. Well, I must have decided then that I would like to go back to hospital nursing. Yes. And that's when I went to Memorial.
Now, was there still manpower control in Adelaide at this stage?
I'm not sure whether it was manpower at that point in time. I think it came in. Well, I suppose it did.
I think it began in 42.
Did it? Oh,
and
well,
I
must
I
have done.
I experienced it myself in 1945. So.
Ah. Yes.
You probably had to get permission for what you wanted.
I probably did, but I don't remember it anyway. Yeah. I got to Memorial somehow or other.
Yes, good.
And whilst I was at Memorial, I was invited to open Hindmarsh Memorial Hospital, it was called at that stage.
Yes, I remember that.
Hindmarsh was a private hospital. Mm-hmm. When Memorial took it over, and it was a desperate situation because the midwifery beds in South Australia were absolutely hopeless.
In fact,
the girls had to book their beds before they became pregnant, if it was possible, if they were planning a family. Yes, they'd book a bed 12 months ahead. So it was very difficult years.
Mm.
So Memorial decided to buy the property, and I went down there with Mr. Davidson and his wife. Mr. Davidson was the secretary of the Memorial Hospital at the time, and I went down with him and we set it up with everything that was necessary. And they were busy years. We'd do 1,000 babies, and of course the nursing staff was manpowered at that stage, and we could only have a certain number on our staff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I used to do the laundry. I had one cook. We used to have to do all our soiled laundry, terribly inadequate. Mm-hmm. Napkins we'd run short of. It was two very desperate years. My family were wonderful to me. They used to come down. My sister used to come and help me, and my old aunts used to come.
What help was sort of domestic things?
Yes, cooking and yes,
and
yes.
You were left there responsible.
Absolutely,
for
Absolutely, yes.
Did you have any opportunity of sort of letting the Memorial know that things were really bad?
Oh, they knew. Mr. Davidson was always there. But you know, I was young and energetic, and I had wonderful girls around me. You see, I'm still friendly with those girls that were worked with me in those years.
Yes.
I see one regularly each week now. Yes, so they were good years. And we did have a little recreation. I can remember after working madly in the hospital, and after all, you didn't never count your hours, you just worked madly on. If ever I did go to the pictures at night, my name would, telephone number would be on the screen, and I'd be out and before you knew where you were. These are also the days before specialists, you know, pretty well. There was Sir Brian Swift and Ron Virko.
Just a few of them.
Yes, and Dr. Worm.
Yes. And
I think Ruth Hayway, Harry Fisher. Yes. That was about the limit.
Just a handful of them.
That was about the limit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd got to know them at Memorial so that it was easy to follow through. Yes. But it was amazing. We did never have any, very few stillborn babies, not any cesarean sections while we were there. We didn't have a theatre anyway.
No. And you very few. Remember occasions when you had to move anyone on for a Caesar?
They would have gone to Memorial,
gone,
of course.
Yes.
Right. And the very premature babies went to Mareeba.
Nearby.
Yes, so that we were covered in that way, but I don't think we ever had to send many there.
What did you do with your, did you ever keep the less premature ones, you know, the sort of small but not desperately small?
Oh yes, always.
What were the reasons for looking after prem babies there?
Oh, we'd wrap them in cotton wool and feed them with a pipette, which was what we were taught to do. Treadle, of course, so I had that backing.
Yes.
So I was very confident, very young and very confident, and loved every minute of it. But when I think of the delivery conditions now, and we deliver babies on a theatre table.
Is that the normal place for delivery?
They must have been so uncomfortable.
Yes. And was that because there was no...
We didn't have a proper label ward bed. I don't know that we ever did get one.
Gracious.
It wasn't until
I stood on a theatre table.
Yes. Well, of course, I would never leave a patient in labour.
Yeah.
They used to labour on their beds in their rooms.
Yes.
And then be taken for the delivery mainly. Mm-hmm. And they would never be left alone. That's one thing that I was very adamant about, that not anybody in labour should be left alone, whatever happened. Mm-hmm. But the babies were always kept in the nursery, and once again they were never labelled. Mm-hmm. I was only thinking the other day how interesting it is, you know, with all the gadgets they have for midwifery these days. Mm-hmm. And I don't think in those days we ever took fetal hearts. There were no fetal stethoscopes, as I knew later on. You'd put your ear on the mother's tummy, and as for examining them, you just, and then have a sheet at the end of the bed to pull on when they were in labour. It's all, and they'd have morphia and hyoscine. They'd be absolutely up the wall because they wouldn't know what they were doing. And yet the babies would be all right, you know.
Mm.
Amazing. I was only thinking about that the other day.
Yes, that's right, that the actual techniques have changed.
Yes, so much, yes. Mm. Well, then I came home. I suppose I was up there for about 6 months. And I came home and I relieved the matron at Mount Pleasant Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Who was the matron there then? Was that
Lani? Lani was there, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and old Lionel Cowling, who was a wonderful surgeon.
Yes,
I learned a lot from him.
Good.
I really did learn a lot from him because he was very forward-thinking, a wonderful surgeon, and used to get his patients up out of bed, you know, after the training at the Royal Adelaide and at Memorial. You know, Memorial Hospital in those days was a wonderful place for people to go and have their babies. They used to come in there with their own mattresses and their pillows and their blankets, the whole house practically would come in when they were having a baby there. They would stay in bed for 14 days, and they had these wonderful women on the staff at Memorial who would go home with mothers afterwards and care for the babies, sometimes for 6 weeks.
Good gracious.
They were the days, weren't they?
That's right. Yes. Pressure on the beds when they stayed for that length of time.
That's so true. And of course they didn't, weren't allowed to put a foot out of bed. And so you can imagine what a turnaround. Yes. When I go to Mount Pleasant and here he is going to the shower the morning after a gallbladder operation. And I thought this was wonderful because his theory was good, you know, no deaths from thrombosis, absolutely. Yes. So, of course, that was wonderful for me.
Mm.
I came back to Memorial after that. I probably did some private nursing. But they offered me to be in charge downstairs at of the midwifery wing at Memorial, which I was. And from there, I was invited to come to Glenelg. The bed shortage was still desperate, and this was in June of 1950.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a post-war baby boom, wasn't there?
Absolutely, yes. Mm. Well, the bed situation was still desperate. And Harold Brown, who was head of Brown and Pierce, surgical books and equipment, he lived at Glenelg in Robert Street. And the doctors in Glenelg, Dr. Stoddart and Dr. Stoddart and several of the other, Don Steele, and Dr. Bowring from Brighton, they used to have to come to Memorial to deliver their babies. There was no hospital in this area at all. Harold Brown was an Apexian, he belonged to the Apex Club, and this property in Farrell Street was for sale, and a group of the Apex boys got together and with the doctors and decided that it would be a good idea if they could raise the money to open a midwifery hospital. So that's how the idea was born. And because I was working at Memorial and the doctors knew me there, they asked me if I'd be interested to start the hospital down here. So after much deliberation and coming down and looking at it and meeting the board, who were a pretty wonderful crowd of men, and I decided that I would, and I asked Pat Cousin to come with me, and she was at that time working in the nursery at Memorial.
What's her surname?
Pat Cousin, C-U-S-S-E-N. Mm-hmm. She was in the nursery at Memorial at that time. Mm-hmm. I asked her if she'd like to come down with me, and we both came down and had a look at it and decided that we would both consider it. So we started down here on the 1st of November with the workmen still working. No equipment, no anything. We had to order all the bedding and the beds. Well, it's a long story and it's all there in that book.
Isn't that lovely?
Yes, yes. Well, you can take that away and you can take whatever you want out of that, because it's a very interesting story. Yes. At Glenelg, I decided I'd stay there for 5 years, but it went on for 24.
24, I knew. Yes. It was a long time. Isn't that marvellous?
Yes. Yes, and I saw it grow from an 18-bed. Well, we started, it was to be opened in the December. Lady Norrie was to open it.
Yes.
And we were camping. There was nothing in the kitchen, no stove. We'd had to cook our meals outside on an open grate. It was even before the days of real barbecues. We had an old-fashioned grate with a... Yes. So that was interesting, but we had such wonderful support from the Apex boys, who
they
were marvellous.
They
were there every day and every night, and the architect, Caradoc Ashton.
Yes.
He was wonderful, and he used to be around there. Mr. Giles was the chairman of the board, and they all supported us no end, and it was really great. So I recruited some staff.
Yes.
Well, three of us came from Memorial, really, because Sister Green came down also, who was a very good sister.
She came at the same time, did she?
Well, soon after, yes, later on.
Was she also from Memorial?
Yes, yeah, she was also from Memorial.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And one night, I think it was about the 23rd of November, it was to be opened on the 1st of December, but I'm not quite sure of the date, but this lass came in the early hours of the morning. We had already turned several away, because Ashford was just a small private hospital.
Yes.
At that time.
Mm-hmm.
But we had an arrangement with them that if we were not ready to take the meds that were booked, that they would take them. But this girl particularly wanted to be delivered at Memorial, at Glenelg, because she had been born there when it was a hospital when she was young.
It was a private hospital
in early days, but when we took it over, it was a boarding house. So it had to have a lot of alterations,
yes.
So we took her, and it was a big day. It must have been a Saturday, because the Weirs, you know, Mr. Weir the builder?
I've forgotten his name.
They live in White Street, or lived in, they still do, I think, live in White Street. And there was a big do down there that day for the fete to raise money for the hospital. And everybody who was anybody in Glenelg was there. And then they put it over the microphone that the baby was going to be born at the Glenelg Community Hospital. Well, we had everybody there, the mayor and mayoress. You'd have thought the architect was the father, the way he smoked packets of cigarettes and paced up and down outside. Yes, it was a lovely experience. And then everybody after the fete came up to see the baby.
Oh, what a wonderful reception.
Yes. So her photographs are there, and carry on about the first baby that was born. Then we had several before the opening, when Lady Norrie came along and opened it. And
there were some babies for her to see.
Yes, yes. Well, we delivered over 1,000 a year, every year.
And you say you began as an 18-bed hospital?
Yes, and we increased it to a 40-bed hospital over the years.
Over the years, it wasn't a massive increase, but 40 is a nice manageable size.
Yes, just right.
Yes. And all the time that you were there, was it purely maternity?
Yes. No, I'm sorry.
No.
Not towards the latter years, as the pool... came in, you see, we saw all those years, yes, and our midwifery bookings went down.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in these years, more specialists on the scene. So we copped a few of them onto the board so that I can. I was the only woman on the board, you see, but I
Glad as the director of nursing, you were on the board right through.
Yes, right from the beginning, and I was consulted in every way, and I think I always got my own way too.
Yes.
But they were a wonderful board, and they were a great group of men.
Mm. And how was the hospital funded in those?
Well,
it was
by public subscription. People raised money in the area for the hospital. The Apex Club had functions, and the whole community was behind the effort because the beds were so necessary in the area. And the mayor and mayoress were interested, so the town hall was always available for functions, and people had fetes and girls, they had beauty contests, and it was quite a community effort.
Subscription.
Yes.
As you say, a very good community effort.
Yes, yes, yes. And the bank gave us a loan.
Mm-hmm.
Our fees at that stage were 8 guineas a week when we first started. And the patients used to stay in for 8 to 10 days, but I can assure you their beds never got cold. We'd have to take them out of bed the morning they were going home to put somebody else in it, and they were delivered on barouches and staff beds, you name it, and we had them everywhere.
Limited labour wards, yes.
Gradually we built our labour wards up to 4, and then we built a theatre, we enlarged our nursery. We had a donation from Mrs. Mudge, who was a very well-known citizen there in the area. She gave us £1,000 towards increasing our nursery, which made it the nursery that it is almost today. We started off with a very small nursery and small cribs. But one thing we did start, as soon as we started at Glenelg Community Hospital, and because of my experience at Mount Pleasant Hospital and early ambulation of the patient, we got our mids up very early and got them moving very much against the grain of the doctors, who said my patient is not allowed out of bed, and unfortunately as soon as he turned his back the patients would be up, and not any, and the mothers used to come in and say, you know, my daughter shouldn't be out of bed. But
How did you work that one? Because you had a little bit of persuasion.
Well, we were very determined that it was the better thing for the patient, which it was. So they
never proved to be otherwise.
No, and so we kept on, and I think perhaps in those days it's very different to nursing today.
But you'd have to. Well, of course, the doctors had high regard for you, even though. They weren't so keen on
Yes, I guess so, I guess so.
And the patients themselves, I guess, would advocate it, would recognise that they felt better.
I'm sure they did, and they were more able to cope. And the other thing was we didn't have rooming in at the hospital. The babies were all kept in the nursery. They were not labelled either, but their cribs were labelled. But the mothers were always welcome in the nursery. They used to come to the nursery to see if their babies were crying. They used to come to the nursery to pick them up and take them back to their rooms and feed them. And we did that right from the beginning, or as early as possible. I did send 2 or 3 of my senior staff to Tweddle in the very early years to do their infant welfare so that I'd have proper backup of people who knew what they were doing with the babies. So we did that right from the beginning, and we were the first hospital to start relaxation classes.
Yes. Tell me a little more about that.
We were very forward-thinking in a lot of our things. Instead of having screens around the beds, we were the first ones to have curtains around the beds, and we had proper obstetric beds. Oh, it was heaven. And very exciting because we had blue walls.
Colours,
colour, into the hospital.
How was it that this came about? I mean, were they, obviously you had some ideas.
Yes, and the architect was very forward thinking. We used to get together daily, practically, and he'd be as interested and as excited about it all as we were, which was a great help.
And so, you would say, would you say that your ideas really came from a variety of situations in which you'd been?
Yes, yes.
But you
definitely
seem to be a jump ahead of even those situations somehow.
Yes. Well, I kept abreast of things, and I think I was very observant. I went to Melbourne often and had a look at the maternity hospitals over there. I used to haunt the women's hospital in Victoria because I still was friendly, of course, with the Bailey family, and I had other friends over there. So I used to pop over there every so often. And whilst I was there, I'd visit other hospitals so that I knew what was going on. And colour in homes even was coming in at that stage. So it was really something to have pale peach walls and blue ceiling and one blue wall, which was hideous if you'd see it. No. But, yes.
And just leaving the hospital situation for a moment, tell me about any connections that you had with groups of nurses. I recall you as a member of the Florence Nightingale Committee.
I was on the Florence Nightingale Committee. This was all, that was prior to me going to the College of Nursing, I guess.
What year did you go there? Can you remember that? And you were saying that you went to the College of Nursing Australia in 1958.
Yes.
You would have been about 44 then.
Yes.
An interesting age to be embarking on something new in the way of study.
And my word, it was very difficult. Yes. Very difficult, yeah.
What prompted you to apply to go to the College of Nursing?
Well, I felt I needed to do something. I either had to change my occupation, I was getting into a bit of a rut, and I needed, and times were changing. Mm. Years were going by. We had a lot of changes very quickly, and I wanted very much to keep up with what was going on.
Yes.
And I felt that how long had the college had been going? About since about 1950.
The first course was 1951,
yes.
I think.
Yes. So I felt it was time I did something about it.
Hmm.
So I can't even remember where I applied, but I know I must have been enthused about it and decided to go and ask the board for a time,
which they gave me leave.
Yes.
Salary
going.
Yes.
Well, I think they did. I can't remember. I'm sure they did keep my salary going or part thereof.
Yes, good.
Anyway.
Well, it was valuable to them.
Yes, of course it was. Of course it was. And they were more than anxious for me to go and do it.
Mm. So tell me a little of what you remember of the course at the college.
I think it was marvellous. I was very impressed. It was all a lot of common sense, as far as I was concerned, because I'd been doing administration for all those years.
Yeah.
And it just sort of put everything into perspective, but it also made me think. Mind you, a lot of it was double Dutch for a while, because I found concentration very difficult and I found studying very difficult. Mm. But the tutors were very good, and it was a very friendly atmosphere, and the girls that I did it with, Lucy Bowen from Western Australia, and I were great friends. We really became great friends and still are.
Mm-hmm.
And we quite enjoyed it, but we'd also go and play golf occasionally and walk in the park to get away from it.
Where did you live? Where did you have accommodation when you were
there? We lived at the college.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Good. And
upstairs.
That was convenient.
It was very convenient. And the tutors were there. Can't even remember their names now.
Pat Chummy was the director.
That's right.
And another Pat.
Yes, another Pat.
His name I forgot.
Yes, she was very good, isn't it?
Yes.
Terrible. I forget. She was our main tutor.
Yes.
And we used to have lots of lectures. Mm. Now, I was very impressed, and I enjoyed it all. But as I say, it was a very hard year of concentration. But I gained a lot. But it also made me think, because this was the time when administrators were coming into hospitals. Mm-hmm. And I think I could foresee what was going to happen and that nothing would be the same again.
Yes.
In any hospital situation. I felt that if nurses were not careful, that their jobs would be taken away from them. And I think that was the most important thing that I used to always be saying, you know, we've really got to do something about this and we've got to be terribly careful.
Yes, and you felt then that you had to be as well equipped academically as anyone else who
absolutely
might be doing that.
Absolutely, yes, mm-hmm. yes. But I also felt that even the situation at Glenelg Community, which was a small hospital, and we weren't even a 40-bed by then, we needed more than just an ordinary matron who could run around and do this, the accounts and the pays and the cooking and the labour wards and everything. There had to be changes made.
So you came back after a year of hard work.
Yes.
With your qualification and that dear little college badge, which I noticed that you were had as a...
Yes, very proud of it too.
Good. And when you, I noticed there were other things. For example, you amongst your badges, there was an old internationals badge. That must have implied that you also had a grant from the Florence Nightingale Committee.
I think so. I cannot remember very much about it at this stage, but I'm quite sure that I did have a grant from the Florence Nightingale. Well, I applied for it and I feel sure that I may have got something.
Well, that badge is an indication of it because that association called the Old Internationals was actually made up of nurses around the world who had had Florence Nightingale scholarships in one form or another.
So
that would be the case.
Yes.
And subsequently, you were associated with committees in Adelaide that were related to the college?
Well, of course. When I came back, I joined the college South Australian branch of the College of Nursing, and I was also on the Florence Nightingale Committee.
Yes.
And I think I was on the Education Committee at one stage.
And Anne, what about changes in nursing and the attitudes of nurses and so on? Have you any comments to make about that?
Well, we always had trained staff. We had all trained staff right from the beginning at Glenelg, and therefore they were all hospital-based trainees, and they stayed with me, most of them, until the time I retired. So some of them were there for 19 to 24 years. So I didn't have a great deal to do with the nurses that were... Well, Sturt had opened by this time.
Well, Auntie Sturt hadn't, no. Sturt didn't open until 75, so it was after you
It was after I retired, yes. Well, it's because...
It's only in more recent experience being a patient that you've...
That's right, yes. Yes. Well, as I say, from experience, I always encouraged people to keep up with the modern trends and to know what was going on. But I hadn't much experience of the younger ones coming along.
No, that's right, for some time after you retired. Yes. Although you were ill and needed surgery fairly soon after you retired.
Yes, 2 years, I think. I had arthritic hips for a few years before I left and had been having a lot of treatment from Dr. Bunnell for many years for physiotherapy, but he thought, this is another thing, you see, had I known that I could have a hip replacement before I retired, I could have gone on for another few years. But he said that I was too young to have hip replacements, really? And that I shouldn't have it until I was 68, by which time I would have been in a wheelchair, well and truly, because it was becoming more difficult to walk about in my latter years, well, the latter year particularly. And then I coped reasonably well after I retired with more rest. But then I had the hip replacement, and I was marvellous. I drove up to Queensland 6 weeks after I'd had my hip replaced, so I didn't do too badly. And then 2 years after that, I had the other one done, which wasn't a success. But the nursing was still very good, and the girls were marvellous, but they were still hospital-based a lot, but were having a lot more lectures. And I really myself feel that the hospital-based nursing was a wonderful training with block system for education. I really do think it was very important to have the theory as well as the practical, and I still feel that's important. But I guess, again, you know...
Yes, well, I suppose the thing is that the newer training provides a broader base. The hospital training almost inevitably has to be hospital-based.
Yes,
and
yes.
These days, with changes in attitudes to healthcare, so much more nursing is done outside hospitals.
Yes, and I think it will go on.
Basic training prepares across the board for people then to find areas that they want to specialise in.
Yes, I think that's the important thing. I think it's selection as much as anything, don't you?
That's true.
I think that if they're well selected and the administrators and the teachers and the technicians have extra training.
Yes.
And the bedside nurse will always be needed.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
Because... this is one thing that I remember so much from the college, is the patient was always the centre and everything revolved around the patient. And in latter years I used to say to myself, well, my goodness me, if the patient is the central thing, it seems to me as though that's all theory, because it's not in practice.
It's not happening.
It definitely isn't happening today. Although... I think it depends on the individual a lot. If a nurse is really a dedicated nurse, well, you'll get the care and attention. But when you're sick, let me tell you that the only thing you really want is somebody to hold your hand and be kind to you.
Yes.
You don't care how much theory they've got in their head. That doesn't matter. What does matter is that they're there when you want them. And nurses have had to change over the years. It left a lot to be desired, and I think nurses used to think because they were nurses they could tell people what to do. And that, I think, was a terrible situation and something I never allowed to happen. I always allowed my patients to think for themselves, to have their own pills, and I used to be always saying to the staff, they are people. And they run their own homes, they look after their husbands, they do their cooking and their cleaning. Why should they lose their identity when they come into hospital? And that's still true today.
Yes, that's right, and it still needs emphasising.
It still needs emphasising very much, because I suppose anybody who's in power lets it go to their head sometimes. But I think nurses of all people have got to remember that they're human beings and they're frightened.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how sick they are, if they're going into hospital, it's a frightening attitude. But then again, the public have changed, haven't they?
That's
now.
The point.
The public
That's right.
have changed.
They have got different expectations.
Very much, yes. And I don't know that the younger people today really want people to hold their hands and be sympathetic towards them, and I wonder if that's because their mothers go out to work. You know,
they've been thrown
to their own resources and made to think for themselves. That's something that we have to think about.
Society changes. Nursing must change.
We must always be prepared for change, no matter what, and welcome it and not resist it.
And you give a very young approach. Your ideas are very young, fresh ideas, I think, coming from your wealth of experience.
Yes, well, I think it's important, really, you know. I think all people should be prepared for change. And you know, we don't want to sit back and do things today like we did yesterday. It's a challenge. Life's a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about, isn't it?